This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 349 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the audio recording of the budget subcommittee meeting held on Wednesday, September 16th, beginning at 5:45 p.m. The meeting was conducted via virtual conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirement of this pandemic period. As a quick recap, current local receipts coming in per FY 2021 budget, that is good. We'll look to another meeting in October to see if anything is happening with the federal and or state funding before making the next decision in a November timeframe before the budget tax rate is set in December. Town Administrator Jamie Helen explained the accounting for the CARES Act funding, how it is being allocated. You can review the details in the memo linked as part of the meeting agenda. This subcommittee would benefit from having someone from the school district participate to help answer the school side questions when they arise. Buildings are getting UV filter upgrades and additions to their ventilation systems due to the pandemic. Some of this will be easier, i.e. less expensive, than other older buildings, which will cost more. The specific building breakout to be gathered as they go forward with the hope to get all the work done by the end of December 2020. The full show notes also include my notes taken on Twitter during the meeting, as well as the agenda and associated budget documents released for this meeting. The meeting itself runs around 40 minutes. Let's listen to the budget subcommittee meeting of September 16.
20 Town Council Budget Subcommittee meeting to order. Let me first start by reading a few things. The public will not be permitted to enter the building or participate in person. Only pre-approved participants on the meeting agenda will be allowed to enter the building and participate in person. Residents can attend by participating via the Zoom platform. Want me to read the note to the residents as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Due to the continued concerns regarding the COVID-19 virus and Governor Baker's declared state of emergency, we will be conducting a remote virtual town council meeting, subcommittee meeting, for all public access and participation. In an effort to ensure citizens' engagement and comply with open meeting law regulations, citizens will be able to dial into the meeting using the provided phone number, cell phone, or landline is required, or a citizen can participate by clicking on the attached link, which you'll find on your Zoom platform. The attached link and phone number will be active for the duration of the meeting for citizens to ask questions, voice concerns. If residents are just interested in watching the meeting, it will also be on live stream Franklin TV and shown on Comcast Channel 11, Verizon Channel 29. Let me see here. We are going to go right into the agenda. Number one is the FY21 budget update and discussion. Town Administrator Jamie Helen, would you like to start?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through you to the members and the folks watching at home. Gorgeous cat. So just to go through a couple of highlights, you know, obviously now we're after Labor Day, which is typically where we start getting into more budget season. This year is a little different because we're still working on the current fiscal year. But in the memo that I wrote to the community and in this subcommittee, there's a few highlights that I would point out to any of those that are curious at home or who watch this or listen to it later on. The state legislature and the governor this year did pass a what I would call a one-third fiscal year budget through October 31st, 2020. They passed that budget with level FY20 numbers. In addition, the legislature also committed to fiscal year 20 local aid numbers. For the town of Franklin, this is actually really good news. As many people know, the Student Opportunity Act was passed last November, and we didn't really know what the fate would be financially for the town as that act got implemented. It's clear through these two actions, at least thus far, it's clear to me that the legislature for the time being has paused its implementation of the Student Opportunity Act. We did have on the cherry sheet our the charter school assessment that we have to pay out was $5 million. As of now, again, that's what's in law. That's what the town paid last year. We were potentially looking at a much higher number as the Student Opportunity Act would be implemented. That was to be phased in over 7 years. This was going to be year one of that 7-year phase. And really, at the end of the day, I could talk about this all night, which I won't, but you know, ultimately, that's really good news. And it's really good for local aid for Franklin because it keeps a stable, keeps stability from last fiscal year. And you know, we're obviously hopeful that the legislature continues that and maybe tries to get through this fiscal year with the same number as last year. Which leads me to local receipts. As many of you remember, we did significantly cut our assumption in the FY21 budget of local receipts by 25%, roughly. The good news is we are on target right now from July and August to meet that target of what we budgeted for. So again, that's really good news. As I outlined in my memo, obviously, I think when we get past Thanksgiving through the holidays, it's going to be more of a concern just in terms of how we deal with the winter season and where COVID is. That's the only big unknown at this time in terms of local receipts. But as of now, local receipts look very good, which is, again, good news. Congress, as many people see in the news, I attached a couple of articles from State House News Service. Recently, it looks like there is some discussion going on back in Congress about another stimulus package. That does have a big impact on what happens to Franklin. If they are to pass any stimulus money to help revenues for state and local governments, we're going to be in a better position for this fiscal year, and we hopefully will stave off large cuts. If Congress does not pass any stimulus for local and state governments, you know, we're going to have to see what happens. It looks as if there's a group of folks, as of yesterday, today, that are going to introduce a compromise plan. I think we've seen this before. I would still not expect any action out of them until the end of the month, but we'll have to see what happens. As Senator Spilka and the Speaker of the House and the Governor have all said, they are not going to take up any budgetary deliberations on Beacon Hill until they see any definitive action or lack of action out of Congress. So as we've all heard, I think on many calls before, the state is committed to trying to look at its budget to finalize the FY21 budget sometime in October. So at this point, we look out a little bit in the future. We're looking at a mid-November budget amendment before the council, maybe December. I don't know exactly when because I have to wait for Congress to act or not act and see what Beacon Hill does and what the final numbers are for FY21. Finally, in the update, I did attach to this packet an update on federal stimulus money that the town has received. The town has received exactly $2.58 million has already come into the town coffers on the sheet. I'm happy to answer any questions, but the big bulk of that has gone to in the form of a large grant to the school district for expenses. And then the big chunk of that money already has been to order, which we announced back in, I think, June, that we were ordering the 4,000 Chromebooks from federal stimulus money. The town also, two more things. The town does have $1.8 million remaining in CARES Act money. And that money has already been earmarked for both PPE and to retrofit all of our school and town buildings with cutting edge UV radiation, which is basically the safest technology we could ever have into trying to prevent the transmission of not just COVID, but any viruses. And so I give Mike D'Angelo, you know, an unbelievable amount of credit. He's been working on this since May. We're one of the very few towns that are doing this. The kill rate of viruses is extremely high in that 98.9% range. It's much more effective than filtration and improvement on filtration. I think the school committee has also talked about this at some of their meetings, but we're looking at implementing all buildings being done by the end of the calendar year. And obviously, we went out to bid already for the municipal building, the high school, And we will soon be going out for the senior center, the library, and some the elementary schools will be next. So that's a project in motion, and that will be the rest of our CARES Act money. The CARES Act money stops, dries up on December 31st. So right now, when we get done with all this, we're looking at about $4 to $4.5 million of federal assistance through FEMA, CARES Act, and the Department of Education. That's a pretty good chunk of money, and it's something that the residents in the town should be thankful for. It's going to bring a lot of improvements. Obviously, the technology in our duct work for the UV is going to be a huge advantage. But also, I wanted to make sure, because I've gotten a lot of phone calls, and Mr. Chairman, I think you brought this up. You've gotten some phone calls about who's been paying for the PPE. Mm-hmm. Is it the school budget? Is it the town budget? All of our PPE has been covered by federal grants, FEMA assistance, or in some cases, donations. And so, you know, we've been very fortunate thus far. And I continue to be, will be continue to be fortunate until the end of the year. The big question then comes in January, what happens then? And those questions hopefully will be answered in the next few months from the state and federal government. Last thing I'd say is just thank Alicia. She's been coordinating our FEMA and CARES Act money. I think it's her first time applying for money at FEMA, and she's learning great lessons. Oh.
She walked out.
Oh, she left.
We were giving her accolades, and
give her accolades.
Went away.
Here.
She went back to work.
She did. That's so funny.
Like three more.
You know, so it's good experience for her, and yeah. So happy to answer any questions.
Awesome. Vicious.
We were just talking about you.
So.
Thank you. Could you touch a little bit, and then I'd like to go to the counselors. Can you just touch, I know you said 4,000 Chromebooks. I think it's important to let the residents know the other money and where it went for CARES Act and what we spent it on. So.
Sure. So everybody can look at the memo and the breakdown in the chart. And I also know, I'll make a quick plug, the Finance Committee is going to have a meeting on October 6th where this information is going to continue to get out into the public. So we've done $946,000 was for the 4,000 Chromebooks, which is for K for 8. Then we did about $48,000 in some additional laptops and equipment and printers for a lot of this town staff that had to work remote right off the bat. So a lot of our finance staff didn't have laptops or some of the other folks, and we got those going, and we were able to get reimbursed for brand new equipment from the federal government there. From CARES Act, we did about $38,000 of PPE. But I note that's about 25% of the overall cost. The remaining 75% of the PPE costs came, we're hopefully getting reimbursed from FEMA. And then there was about $40,000 worth of personnel costs. There was some staff that were out. There was some overtime shifts, and there's some staff training, particularly for the police and fire early on. The federal government did pay for our police and fire training for how to deal with COVID, getting in the ambulance, how to disinfect. Obviously, as everybody knows, we've been in this for 6 months, but 6 months ago, nobody knew anything. So that was very helpful from the federal government to help fund that. The additional FEMA reimbursement's been about $210,000 for PPE, which I should also acknowledge is also the disinfectant for this building, the schools, that all the custodians are using for all the vehicles, for the public safety vehicles, DPW. All of that is being reimbursed by FEMA as well. And again, FEMA did about another $42,000 worth of personnel costs, particularly for police and fire, to cover some of the overtime, staffing, and personnel related issues that we had. So the school department was given $1.15 million to allocate towards staff salaries. They've had to hire a tremendous amount of permanent substitutes. A big portion of that, their funding was for their own remote capabilities, laptops, teacher equipment, instructional programs, and they received about another $123,000 in a formula grant that came out for special student populations. I would note one more thing that I think deserves a plug, and I think we talked about it at the EDC. Which is the town is receiving another $100,000 for small businesses that have five or fewer employees. The application is up online now. I know Chrissy's been managing that grant program and doing a terrific job, coordinating with our consultant that we hired as part of a 6-town consortium. Some folks may see some news in the press. I think Foxborough got one recently too. There's some other towns, but we've been working with Bellingham, Wrentham, and we hope to have that money probably out sometime in November or December. Once we get a full understanding of who in town qualifies. So if there's any businesses out there with 5 or fewer employees, please go to the town website. It's also on Twitter to go apply, get your hat in the ring, and we'll continue to walk. Chrissy will continue to walk everybody through that process over the next couple months until we can get that money out.
Excellent. Councilors, any questions? Councilor Plagrie.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just concerned with the 4,000 Chromebooks. At budget time, they had a line item for quite a few Chromebooks. Why are we doing this now when everyone was supposed to have had one at that time?
Yeah, I think that there's a heavy rotation. Tim would have to talk about the rotation of them. Some of them go bad. Some of them, I don't think every student had one. And at the end of the day, for the federal government to be able to provide us with this many Chromebooks free of charge is a huge return on investment, because we're also protecting the future. We're not quite sure. I mean, I hope we don't scale back, but if kids have to go home remotely, at least they'll have a brand new device that they'll be able to use.
I remember when we met and I asked the question about, you know, all of these Chromebooks that we're ordering during the initial budget, and it was so that everyone had one. So I really am uncomfortable about that number and what you're talking about. I've spoken to some people from other communities, and Medford being one, they don't even supply them to their kids, to the students. So this isn't something that we have to do. I was told by this person that, you know, the families, they purchase them. If they're not able to, then they go to the school and they see about the lunch program and all of that, if they're, you know, they need to supplement and purchase one for them. But it just seems like, Franklin, all of a sudden we're doing all of this. We just did it during budget time. Now we're doing 4,000 more. I just don't like that.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Councilor Allen?
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does it work? Yeah. I have a question about the Chromebooks. I was wondering if we actually received them all, because we all know, there was a shortage of the Chromebooks. And I was just wondering if we knew if there was any child that didn't have internet that needed that, and if there were any funding to make sure that they could stay connected. And then I have a couple other questions that are different from the Chromebook, so I'll let you, do you know that?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman. So the Chromebooks have not arrived.
Okay.
We did order them well before most other towns did, if not all other towns.
Mm-hmm.
We did order them very early. We did expect them, I believe, back sometime now. And I believe now we're expecting them in November. That's the guess, I believe. I will admit that I've moved on to other projects. I haven't gone back to circle back and to see exactly when that timeline is. I can certainly ask Tim and get back to everybody about when the due date is or when they may arrive. I should acknowledge that when we purchased the Chromebooks each year through the capital program, we didn't buy one Chromebook for every kid. Usually it's a certain percentage. So maybe say we buy 500 each year, and they go into a replacement, and Tim recycles old ones, brings old ones back. They take the old ones and drop them down to the lower grades. And so the K through 8 students all didn't have a Chromebook or didn't have a brand new Chromebook. And so a lot of those students were having a lot of problems, particularly right in March when this hit and shipped everybody home right off the bat. There was a lot of students who were not able to participate, or there was a lot of technical problems. And I think to be prepared for the future as well as the present, you know, the line of thinking was, certainly from the school department especially, was that we need to make sure that every K through 8 student has the best technology that we can afford right now, that if the metrics show that we're going to have another surge, or kids can't come back to the level that they're supposed to in October 1st, or whatever the dynamics are, we're prepared for the future, and every K through 8 child has one.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I was wondering if Chrissy could tell us how many businesses have signed up so far for the micro enterprise grant.
Yep, about 33.
Wow.
Excellent.
That's great.
And that's the application was just to get a feel for how many businesses have 5 or less employees.
Okay. All right. That's great. I'm glad we got the word out and help the businesses. That's great. And then this is to Jamie, the local receipts. So we predicted it was going to be down 25%, just to make sure that I get it right. And then your prediction came true, right? Is that
correct?
Okay. Like you did.
I was hoping that was really wrong well. And it would be higher.
I know. At least it wasn't less, right?
Or less.
Yeah. So what about for the next 6th of the year? Do you have any predictions for that?
Well, I know. Well,
get the magic ball out.
I think that excise tax, which is about half of local receipts, mm-hmm. I think will remain strong. We've always been very conservative with our local excise tax projections. I think meals tax actually will stay somewhat stable. We saw that even in the worst of the pandemic, fast food restaurants were safe, and that's meals tax, right? Grocery stores have a prepared foods. There was still a safety mechanism. It wasn't as big as it was, but there was still a revenue stream, mm-hmm. right? In particular, Gus and his team have been able to backfill and go back and do a lot of inspections they maybe weren't able to do. We heard his presentation last week.
Right.
Again, that's revenue streams. And over the time, I'm hopeful that that catches up. We also have licensing season coming. So, you know, in the next few months toward December 31st, I expect that right now it appears that, you know, most common victualler alcohol mm-hmm. Licenses should be stable until the end of the calendar year. I think the big unknown is more January to April.
Right.
And, you know, we'll talk about this more, you know, at the council meeting, but, you know, everybody saw the numbers, you know, it's certainly not a call for a panic or an alarm. But when I look at the active cases in Franklin or the highest they've been since Memorial Day, you know, I think we have to sit there and say, okay, you know, the trend is not going in the right direction.
Right.
We have to make sure that we're diligent. And as we enter fall, you know, and the restaurants continue to go and people go indoors and be less outdoor seating at some point, right, just from the cold,
yeah.
Or less customers, even if the outdoor seating is available. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think through the rest of this calendar year, I remain hopeful that a lot of the projects that are going on in town and people's homes will still generate revenue like we did see. And hopefully when we get to the winter, we'll see where we're at.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No problem. Chairman Mercer.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Chairman, to Jamie. Couple of quick questions and maybe one somewhat of an answer mm-hmm. on the Chromebooks. The whole Chromebook program started when we built the new high school. And at the time we bought Chromebooks for every student in the high school. And part of the pitch at the time was that we were buying these all in the same year and they wanted to get on a rotating schedule. They know that the life expectancy of a Chromebook, I don't know, 3 years, 5 years, whatever the year is, the number of years are, that they wanted to be able to rotate the Chromebooks in and out, but they all started in the first year. And I think that this is going to give them an opportunity to not only get the K through 8 up and going, with everybody having a Chromebook, as well helping them get into a rotating schedule so that the annual allotment for Chromebooks would be substantially less than we've seen in the first few years, mm-hmm. so that it's just an ongoing thing. Again, that's just from memory. when we were doing the high school. My other question, again, through you, Mr. Chairman, to Jamie. We have, you have the UV and the PPEs number combined. I'd really like to know what that UV number is for all our buildings and schools separated from the PPEs. They're together, or it appears like they're together in what your statement is here. Secondly, as a second part of that, I'd like to know what we, where we have bought the PPEs. Are we through November? Are we through December? And if we're through December with PPEs,
three of us should just get in a room together and have this conversation, because I was just
if we're, we've only purchased them through December, and that's the number that's reflected here, what are we doing come January? Yeah. Or have we thought ahead of the game and have bought into the first quarter? Question, don't know the answer.
Through you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, please, I see PPE surplus was my question, so you run with that.
So on the PPE, we're all set through the end of the calendar year. So we have enough in stock. I would even venture without an exact specificity. Here's the dynamic that's interesting. I think that in that's preparing for if nobody had anything, no masks, they didn't bring in any face coverings. The truth is we know that teachers or staff here or, you know, others are going to wear, they're going to bring their own masks, right? But we don't plan like that. We plan for nothing to happen. So in earnest, that stock that we have is going to continue on into the first quarter of next year. And, you know, again, I would give a quick shout out to Miriam Goodman and Mike D'Angelo for staying way ahead of this. We're in a position with PPE where we buy what we can get. We try to stay months ahead. Obviously, the school's opening today and anticipating to add children on October 1st is going to continue to change that dynamic. And so we've been trying to stay, I can't believe I'm saying this because this has only been 6 months we've been in this COVID thing, but we're trying to stay 3 or 4 months ahead. Now, how the split happens is even a more interesting question, which is why it's lumped in at one. Because the truth is, on the UV, we've had multiple estimates about what it would cost. And there's a range there. That's why these bids that we just put out that we're getting back next week is actually going to really tell us what the market is showing. You know, the fact that Mike has already been out to bid for this and for several buildings is far ahead of the vast majority of municipalities. And so on this, we're actually going to be paving the way. So this is a little bit of a fluid situation. And that's the reason, a little bit of the reason why we decided to lump it all into one number, because we don't know yet exactly what the market is going to show us on some of these bids. So, and, you know, there may be, and we're hopeful that there's other funding sources that may be able to come available. His estimate right now, just for an example, this municipal building is estimated to be about a $40,000 project. So that's a pretty good price for me. Return ROI, you know, return on investment. You pay $40,000 to fix your ductwork for the long haul to be at a 99% kill rate. To me,
on all things,
on all viruses and
bacteria.
That's
what we really need to stress.
I'm hoping that to me, and Mike and I talked about this again, we started this conversation with each other in May as a superintendent. To me, that's what mentally is hopefully what makes people feel comfortable, is ultimately that to me is what's a really big priority, is people need to feel free and comfortable to come into the building, do their business, whatever it is, come in for meetings. And I think that that's a really important factor. And there's no question to the superintendent and I, this was the way to go. And, you know, like I said, we're leading the way. So this building was an approximate cost of about $40,000, just to give people an idea of what we're talking about. Now, the library renovation is going to save us a lot of money on this, because there's only two returns. So that's going to be a quick project and a low-cost project. The high school was built to be able to handle these types of adjustments. It was completely built for this. That actually is anticipated to be about $100,000 to $150,000 a year project. The issue gets into Parmenter, Davis Thayer, Kennedy, the Historical Museum, you know, some of the other facilities that we have that may be a lot trickier in terms of designing the right system. That's when I believe, as of now, that's when you're going to see the cost go up significantly for somebody to go in there, because it's just going to be more product, more work, more labor, and more design.
Just the last point for the, you know, same reason, our facilities director, when this whole COVID started, and him having the foresight to get the sanitizing guns, sprayers, whatever they were, and to have those actually before anybody else had them. And we had, I think we have 7 or 9 of them at this point, if not more. So
I think we have more.
Yeah, and I think I think it's important that as we proceed with this UV piece, that, you know, we even break it out by building.
Yeah.
So that everybody understands what the costs are for each and every building, and then it will be much easier for the council to make decisions as to those expenditures that way. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
One last point through you, Mr. Chairman. To Chairman Mercer's point, you know, there's a possibility here that the entire CARES Act allotment may not be able to pay. We may not have enough to pay for some of the retrofit of a certain building. And then we get into the system of when we get back to free cash. So that point is valid, because at some point it may be coming before the Capitol Committee if there's a few more dollars that are needed. But again, there's so many balls in the air with the state budget and the operating, you know, how to pay for this and what the bids are going to come back at. You know, it's still obviously in flux, but to that point, we'll certainly break out what the bids are, what the exact cost was, what the contracts say. We'll certainly do that as we move forward.
Perfect. Council Plager, did you want to follow up? I apologize.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on the computers again. And I just want to know, what happens to those families that don't have Wi-Fi? How do they do this remote learning?
An excellent question.
And, you know, I wish that the superintendent was, is she on?
She is not.
She's not.
Anyone from the school committee? No. I mean, what happened to those people?
I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that I'm not so sure it's that large of a population of people that don't have the internet.
Even if it's one.
Right. But I think that they know who those students are. And I'm sure that they're handling those situations as is. And maybe Tim gives them a MiFi setup at home. I don't know how that works. I just don't think it's a very small percentage. So I'm more than happy to get an answer from the superintendent or Tim.
Yeah.
I just don't know if there's a child out there that doesn't have the internet. I honestly don't know.
I do know that Comcast and Verizon was making some special provisions for anybody that potentially needed
it. Oh, they were?
Okay. So, yeah,
really?
So,
good.
I didn't even know that.
Alicia, did you want to add to that?
I believe they do have portable, hotspots for that.
Hotspots, that's what they're...
That's good.
The good news is, I was talking to a vendor the other day. I was looking to bring Wi-Fi to every community in Massachusetts, which will be a big change when that comes down the road. So, which is fantastic. I think that when that comes in and, you know, you have free Wi-Fi within your community, we won't be worried about that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4. I'm sorry, Councilor Jones, I cannot have you speak because we are over our limit on number of councilors in the room on a subcommittee meeting. I apologize. So any follow-up on that before I go?
No.
So Jamie, great that we went over this on the CARES Act. A couple of things, talking about the Chromebooks. You know, typically I know as somebody who's been on the council for a number of years, school committee for a couple of years, and the Capitol Committee, I'm usually kind of a pain in the rear end, to say the least, about Chromebooks and how often we give them out. But I think this was a good time to kind of redo and get everyone a Chromebook. I'm most concerned about the kids or the students that are the deepest in economic impact and need those Chromebooks, that that they can now have them and have the opportunity to use them. So I hopefully that will be something we can stay on course with and really make Franklin schools better in technology wise with that. So that was great. I too, as well as Chairman Mercer, would like to know the breakdown of the UV versus PPP. I think that's great. Buildings, it will allow us to decide what buildings have to stay open, what have to close, right? I'll say it. So that's what that's in the back of our mind. 33 businesses are fantastic. Well, sometimes you just have to go for the gold. 33 businesses are fantastic with a microloan. The one thing that I want to talk about was local receipts, and that's where I got a couple other things too. Local receipts. I really think the excise tax will come in ahead of schedule from what I've seen. Car dealers are out of cars and they needed used cars so much in the last 6 months that they've literally gone and asked people who are leasing to turn their leases in early and gave them new cars just to try to keep the used car inventory up. There was an article a couple days ago. I can't remember where I saw it, but I read it. And I know it wasn't on Facebook, so it was true. So what was this say? So I think that'll be really great. So I think that'll be fantastic. The licensing, especially on pet licenses, I feel like now going back to Facebook, if you're on Facebook, everybody in Franklin now has a dog. 35,000 residents, everybody's got a dog. So that was like the COVID thing to do. You'd got a dog and you fixed your house or you fixed your property. So hopefully the permits will be up as well. The one thing I am worried about, and hopefully these the microloans will take care of them personally, but and I don't know if that will necessarily be the case because it's five or under. What I'm more worried about is the meals tax. We have a lot of small businesses that have well more than five people within our community. I like the microloans. The problem is we're leaving out our Main Street businesses, and we continue to do that. It's not the small businesses. I think everybody quickly goes right to small business versus big business. There's another sector in our market that everybody forgets. It's Main Street businesses. Main Street businesses in the start of March 2020 had average of 28 days of income in their coffers in the event of an emergency. That's not even 1 month of income to be able to get by. And now they're 6 months down the line. They've gone through their PPE money. They've gone through everything they can have. Their family is suffering. I was at the food pantry yesterday. I think it would behoove everyone, including this council and the subcommittee, to go down there and watch the people that drive in. They're not what people think are food pantry people. They're our residents. Yeah. It's getting longer. I've worked the Attleboro food pantry line for the last 6 months, almost every Saturday. That's some community that's in the greatest of needs. That is quickly becoming Franklin, where we're seeing people show up that you would never think would go to the food pantry. And it's business owners. It's people that work for businesses that are just trying to hold on to their jobs. So I'm really concerned about that meals tax. I think people are still afraid. I think that we need to really pay close attention to that. We can't lose the businesses that are on the brink. And I wish that we could find another avenue that we could do some kind of leeway to allow them to take some money and be able to use that during the interim. My fear is that with whether it's all of these loans, at some point it's going to become due to pay the piper. And when you have to pay, they're used to their regular income coming in and they're not going to be able to have more. So I'm really concerned of what's on the back end. We saw that at Clark Cutler McDermott during the downturn of our economy, that, you know, they took some loans and then down the road, they couldn't get to pay those back and they ultimately lost their business. I don't want that to be for our Franklin residents. I don't want it to be for our Franklin businesses. So I'm very concerned with that. So I think this is great. If we could just look at an avenue to see what we can do to do that. Hopefully there'll be something. Maybe after November 3rd, we'll have something else available that we can do as well. I think that's what I had. Oh, up cases. You had mentioned increased number of cases. I know this isn't really the time to talk about it, but Franklin has quickly become a bedroom community where a lot of people have second homes over the years. And my hope
And I pray every night that this is the case, is that it's just everybody coming back because they have to get back to school and back to work. And my hope is that that's why we have a little spike. What do I forget what we had last week? It was 8. Do we have
16? I think
16.
16 as of yesterday.
16. So 16 out of 35,000 people is too many, but it's still, we need to try to get that number back to 0, and we all got to work together to be safe. So keep your distance, wear your masks when you're going to not be distant. So, and I think that is all I had. We hired a consultant for the microloans. I asked, one of the questions I had was, did it cost us any money?
It did not cost the town a penny.
Good.
Out of our tax base. But the way that it works is you have to spend 10%, I think is the number, right? It's like a certain percentage of the total grant amount has to go to the administration of it. Not to totally editorialize too much, but when you've spent $8 trillion in Congress, and then you make us go out to bid to hire a consultant to manage your grant program, to get out to businesses where you're talking about people with five employees or fewer, who are going to ultimately see like a $2,000 check, you know, it makes you sit there and get really angry.
Yep.
Just get the money out the door.
That's what we need to do.
It's really frustrating, and I've shared that with this.
I'm sure your staff hears it all the day.
It's just very, very frustrating. I'm sure nobody will hear me, but it's just like, come on, folks. You know, you're talking $2,000 or $3,000, $4,000. That can pay the rent for a couple months for a business of that size. It can keep you open long enough to hopefully get to the other side. But we got to wait and wait and wait and go through all this red tape. So
perfect. Well, I'm glad the federal government was able to do the CARES Act. I can't wait to meet with Karen Spilka and Jeff Roy to work on some state stuff through the council and see what we can do with that, too. So, but any other questions for anyone? Any other things you want to bring in front of the budget subcommittee?
All set, Mr. Chairman.
With that, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Have a good night. See you in a few at the town council meeting.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.